Welcome to Edmentum's Podcast for Parents series, where we cover topics to help you navigate the twists and turns of home learning. I'm your host, David Cicero, and I'm so excited to join you on this journey. So let's go. As more and more students and their parents are needing to do schoolwork and work at home, parents are needing usable tools to deal with behavior more than ever. I know I do. In fact, my office is also my five-year-old's classroom for the time being. So what happens? There are these moments where our child wants or needs our attention at the exact moment you're in the middle of writing a super important email or hopping on a customer call. What do you do? Sometimes we're totally in tune, right? Down on one knee, patient. But there are times where raising your voice to get what you want seems almost unavoidable. So to get us some help on this, we're talking with Jen Perry today, Edmentum's learning designer for social-emotional learning. Jen, can you talk to us a bit about why yelling doesn't work?
Absolutely. And I just love that introduction. You capture the reasons why we yell at times so well. Well, first of all, I want to just normalize like you did. We all yell. It is an attempt to get control. Even I yell, and I teach this stuff all the time. I yell when I'm overloaded or I feel like I won't have the energy for what'll need to happen or because, like you said, I'm out of touch with my own emotions at that moment. We're human. Sometimes we just don't want to have to deal with another I want or I need or really again. So you ask the question, why doesn't it work? Let's first talk about why do we yell? Well, we yell because it feels like it works. For a time in our children's life, it can feel like we have power. Really, we're relying on their relative dependence on us as sort of leverage in that area. We can't really control how they themselves feel or respond. They have to learn how to do that. But as you mentioned, yelling can frighten children into compliance. We can get our own immediate needs met because we get relief from dealing with that situation that's right in front of us, and we can go back and refocus on that email that you mentioned. But really, we want our children to come to us for anything. So to do this, we have to create places where they feel safe and have predictable behavior. Yelling is really dependent on our own emotional regulation. It's not predictable for kids, so it can cause disconnection. You know, because we can't control another person's response and only our own, in reality, we're yelling because we ourselves are not in control. Mostly. Sometimes it's for effect, but generally it's because we ourselves are being torn in multiple directions. We're yelling to get our point across, not to hear the other person's needs being expressed. When we hear ourselves yelling or someone says, "Why are you yelling?" It's a time for a pause, unless, of course, it's a reaction to immediate danger. You know, we all listen better at a lower volume and with a kind tone. Think about it. Think about the last time someone yelled at you and how you might have reacted to that, how you felt. The goal really is to move from control to collaboration. And this allows us to create situations where the other person, in this case our child, can learn to take control of their own behavior. And these are skills that have to be learned, and we're the model. You know, here's a little side note too. You may be like me and you might have had a kid or have a kid who's growing up for whom yelling is a reinforcement. In my household, I had a child who was on the high spectrum of ADHD. And for ADHD kids, many people will medicate them with Ritalin or something like that. And that medication is a stimulant. And yelling gives them a shot of adrenaline. I'll tell you just a real quick story. When my son was younger, you know, we had these scenes where, like, in the morning, he's trying to get his shoes on. And I'm like, "Get your shoes on, get your shoes on, get your shoes on." And finally, "Get your shoes on," right? And he just would look at me and his shoulders would drop and he would sigh and he would get this little smile. And I thought, "Oh my gosh, seriously?" But what was happening is for this kid, I just reinforced their behavior because I met his chemical needs. Like, I gave him that shot of adrenaline. He hadn't taken his medicine yet in the morning. And when we do that, when we reinforce that behavior, you know, we cause that behavior to repeat because we're really just giving a kid what they need. And so that's another reason why yelling doesn't really work. But ultimately, we want to be able to help our kids regulate themselves using the inward sense of control. And yelling is an external way of sort of shutting down a behavior. It doesn't give kids the opportunity to understand why they're feeling or doing certain things, just that it's not okay. I remember at one point, my husband and I went to a movie. This was like years ago, and it was a early Mission Impossible movie, the terrible one where the villain cuts off the tip of a person's finger with a cigar trimmer. And there was a man in there and his wife, and they had their like 7-year-old child there. And I heard the child look at him and say, "Oh, Dad, this is terrible. I'm so scared." And the dad, you know, basically said, "Cut it out. I'm trying to watch a movie." And the kid got quiet. And you know, this is a really extreme example, but I thought to myself, you know, the yelling in that case sort of made the child just learn only that he had to worry about the parental reaction rather than the emotion that was being caused from the movie. And so sometimes we're just not aware of what the need is that's going on. But not yelling is an outward sign that we're trying to listen, and that we're trying to hear the need that's being expressed. It's the beginning of building a safe space to create connection and model self-management. It also conveys to a kid that we are actually in control, because it creates calm rather than fight or flight.
Now, one of the things that I pulled out of everything that you just said, I was looking for just a solid takeaway for me personally in my own life as a parent. You said that, you know, when you yell, you're just shutting down the behavior. And what I thought you were going to say was, it doesn't give you, the parent, the opportunity to learn why they're acting that way. And that may be true, but what you said was, it doesn't give them the opportunity to learn why they are acting that way. They don't have a chance to understand how they're even feeling, right? And so I'm seeing that we want to seek out a sort of greater connection with our children, right? And by not yelling, I think what you're saying is that we'll more easily be able to facilitate that. Is that right?
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for pointing out that nuance. It's so interesting. I mean, obviously, both of those things are important. We want to know what actually is going on for our kids. But ultimately, we also don't want to be the person who has to manage their behavior all the time forever. And so there is this moment of really hearing the need, but also helping them hear the need and think about how to empower them. Because really, you know, our kids at a very young age want to be in control. They want to be independent and have power. And so that deep listening, really the connection of that deep listening, is about empowering our children.
Yeah. And so is that the primary reason why we should kind of seek this deeper connection? It's odd to say that for me. Why should we seek a deeper connection with our kids? Because, I mean, I love my son. I want to know what he thinks. I want to know what he finds interesting. I want to see him learn. I want to know, you know, how he feels. But, you know, I think also what I'm taking from what you're saying is when we yell, we're cutting a really important connection, and maybe it's that emotional connection with them. Why we should seek a deeper connection is so we can sort of build that emotional bridge. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you're right 100%. I mean, ultimately, we're going to solve a lot of problems with our kids, and we're going to have those moments. And 90% of those, we're not going to remember. What we come away with is that emotional connection, that somebody feels heard and loved, and that there's a presence. I really love this question that you ask about why should we seek a deeper connection. It's so funny. When I heard it, I thought the same thing, like, that's such an odd question to ask. But I was thinking about it in two different ways. And one is like this research brain that I have, and then one is the more emotional brain. So how about I answer the sort of technical research one first? Would that be good?
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, awesome. So research, so when I think about why is a deeper connection with our kids important, research tells us that developmental relationships are essential for healthy growth. And that's a phrase that's been coined by the Search Institute that has done a ton of research into relationships and their impact on children's resiliency. It's been true forever, but particularly, you know, some of the things that might stand out to people are things like Erikson's stages of development, which is a basic child development concept that looks at the stages that kids go through and in through old adulthood. But the important piece in it is that in those stages, we build things like trust and independence, and that each of those is really important. And early on in life, the parent facilitates that. And the Search Institute has sort of taken it a step further. First, they define developmental relationship, and I'll do that for you. It's a close connection between a young person and an adult, or between a young person and a peer as they cross over that sort of 11-year-old threshold, that powerfully and positively shapes the young person's identity and helps the young person develop a thriving mindset. These relationships are pivotal because we know that young people with these strong relationships are more resilient, particularly in the face of stress and trauma, which, of course, we are all in the midst of dealing with right now. We know things like kids who have these strong developmental relationships, these deep connections with their parents, their family, or whoever their caregiver is, are 21 times more likely to manage their emotions well. They're 17 times more likely to take personal responsibility for their actions. They're 5 times more likely to be good at making and keeping plans, so follow through, right? And 4 times more likely to have a sense of purpose in life. So that's like the, you know, some of the research things. Additionally, if you are a parent of an adolescent, this might be really appealing to you, that Professor Michael Farrell and Grace Barnes did a study on family, neighborhood, and school-based connections in adolescence, and they looked at cohesive relationships within the family. And then what they found is that kids who are more connected to their family have a higher likelihood of getting good grades and a less likelihood of doing things that we don't want them to do, like, you know, smoking, drugs, you know, drinking, acts of violence, that kind of thing. So that family connection and those deep relationships really have some interesting and important impacts. So that's Wow. The first piece. Yeah, cool, right?
Very, very, very cool. I had no idea. I think if I would have gave it some thought, I might imagine some of these things are true, but now just hearing them sort of, you know, in a list, it's I mean, you said a lot of things I would hope for him.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's kind of mind-blowing. Like that's the textbook reason for a deeper relationship, right? But in order to support our children's success, the more emotional one, right, is we need to help them understand and regulate their emotions. You know, we want kids to be successful with friends and in school and in all sorts of ways. And to do that, we have to manage first our own emotions and listen to the need, as you mentioned. And then our kids need us and want us to be happy with them and to be happy with their behavior. And because behavior happens for a reason, it's our job to sort of be the emotional detective and then the emotional coach, which is a phrase that Mary Sheedy Kirchinka uses in a really cool book called Kids, Parents, and Power Struggles. It's about 20 years old, but boy, I look at it all the time. It was one of the first books in this sort of strength-based social emotional learning, like be aware of your emotions movement. And it's really, really pretty cool. So
what you just said really takes me into my last question. I'm just a quick story for you. You said they want us to be happy with them. And you know, just this week, I started noticing that, you know, my son's 5 years old. You know, he does stuff that, you know, he's not supposed to do. But most of the things that he does that are maybe a little frowned upon, it's very easy to begin to see those really minor things as big things. Mm-hmm. And I was giving off this vibe to him that those things were bad. I mean, they're not bad though, really, right? I mean, maybe he was making too much noise over here. I mean, is that bad behavior? I don't think it is. And so, just the other day I thought, you know what? I'm going to reserve, I'm going to really control how I respond to, his behavior, especially just those random things he does throughout the day being a kid. And what I'm going to do is focus on telling him he's a good boy. I literally did this yesterday. He was pretty quiet outside while I was working. And as soon as I got done working, I went and gave him a hug and I told him, thanks for being such a good boy. You were so quiet out here and I was able to do my stuff. And just the last 2 days of just telling him he's been a good boy and telling, giving him a hug and recognizing that I swear his behavior has changed. I mean, just this morning he comes in and says, Papa, do you need it to be quiet in here right now? And I was like, who is this?
Yeah, right? I love that. Oh my gosh, you just hit on so many different principles of strength-based parenting. I love it.
So, I mean, so that's one way I found that a connection can be made, one small way. And so, here's the big question for you, and it's going to take us to the, to the end of our short talk today is, How do we do this? How do we establish that deeper connection with our kids?
I love it. And so I just want to point out two things you did that you didn't make explicit when you said it, because it's so important for parents to understand is, number one, you didn't just say he was a good boy, but you gave him the specific examples of what he did. So you reinforced what you want to repeat. And that's really important because kids don't generalize, particularly at 5 years old, what it is that they did that was good, because they, their memory is shorter. So I love that you were very specific with that. And the other thing that you said that was really interesting was, this concept of being bad or whatever. And really what we have to remember and reframe is kids are trying to understand their boundaries. They're trying to understand what's safe, what's not safe. What happens if I do this? What happens if I don't do that? And we want our kids to be curious learners, right? So some of that might look like bad behavior sometimes, but really it's about learning, cause and effect and what's going on and how do I control my impulses, because, their executive function is at a place where what they see they want. So I love that example.
Well, I'll keep doing it then.
Good on you. So the first thing, so you asked me, how can we do some of this stuff that we were talking about, right? And the first is identifying your own emotions so that you're responding to actually the child in front of you and whatever that need is, and not your own thing. Like you gave the example right at the beginning of that email that's out there. And I just recently read a book called Untamed by Glennon Doyle, and she talks about her partner lying on the couch and walking out and like being sort of naggy. And why are you laying on the couch? What's going on with you? I mean, she knows she works hard and she was feeling like she needed to set some limits. And then she, after some retrospection, looked back and was like, well, really, it was about me. I wanted to lie on the couch. I wanted a break and I had all this stuff to do. So identifying your own emotions is one of the first steps. The second piece is looking at which emotions you deal best with. So really thinking about, like, we all do really well with sad. When we see sad, we feel empathy and we want to make our children stop crying and feel better and that kind of thing. But sometimes things like angry or excited can be more challenging. I mean, we've all had that excited kid that's like jumping up and down and they have so much energy and you're like, calm down, chill out, relax, cool down, rather than, wow, you look really excited. Let's go outside and burn your energy. So figuring out which ones you deal with best is important, because then you can really focus on some of the ones that maybe you don't. And then for me, the easiest get and sort of the most helpful is this idea of rephrasing and replacing blame with curiosity. So things like when you I mean, God, I can't tell you how many times I said, like, what's wrong with you? Come on, you know better. What's going on? But really what we want to know is like, what happened? How'd you make that choice? Tell me more about what's going on, right? Rather than this concept of what's wrong with you, because they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. So would it be helpful to give you like some short phrases and maybe how you could reframe them?
Absolutely. Let's hear them.
Yeah, cool. So hopefully all of you listening will resonate with some of these phrases, things like settle down, right? We've said that. And a replacement phrase that really helps with connecting is something like, would you like some help with that? Or you look really excited. You're sort of observing the behavior and giving them some language around that. Sometimes there's the don't touch that thing. And, you know, don't touch that. Rather than an approach might say, well, how can you look at that and keep it safe? That's something can break easily. Let's think about what you do. Or, wow, you seem really curious. What do you want to know about that object or that thing that you want to touch? I think two of the phrases that we most commonly use are just ignore it and because I said so. And so I'm just going to talk briefly about those two. So the just ignore it thing, this was something I heard a lot, particularly when I was a school administrator. Like we would ask kids what they could do differently next time when someone did something that they didn't like or maybe hurt them. And the kids would look at you and they would say, well, they would repeat a frequently advised phrase, I know, just ignore it. And I would say, I would think, but can you, right? If you got to the place where the child is behaving a particular way and they couldn't ignore it, like having them telling them just ignore it doesn't really help because obviously they can't ignore it or they sort of would have done that. So changing that phrase to how can I help you or this is really bothering you. Can you tell me how did that make you feel? At least it opens the door to a conversation. And it's not like you know, throw away accountability, but you're just trying to understand where that's coming from and really build on connecting. And then finally, I love this one, like, because I said so. You know, I don't know about you, David, but I don't use it that much. But when my son was younger, he's 22 now, there were these moments where you just get so frustrated, you want to end the conversation. You're like, because I said so, just do it because I said so. And this is usually because we're just tired. We're tired of arguing or, you know, we're arguing because they're arguing because they don't feel heard and they're maybe been successful at wearing us down before, right? So it is worth noting that consistency in your responses is really important, but that's a whole different podcast, right? But because I said so can be replaced with like, you care about this a lot. Try to tell me why this is so important. So, you know, those are just a few of the ways that you can rephrase something that is really disconnecting to something that is much more connecting and become that emotion coach that Kirchinka talks about.
Jim Perry, I really appreciate your time today. I have a page full of notes and I'm looking forward to continuing to have conversations with you and taking more notes and implementing all this great advice that you're giving us all. Again, thank you for joining us today, and we'll talk with you next time.
Take care, David. Bye, everybody.
That wraps it up for this episode. Keep on the lookout for more useful topics on the Edmentum Parent Resource page. Thanks for listening.